The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Welcome to Crime and Justice Radio, where we talk all things crime, justice, mayhem in the courts with expert insiders and legal outcasts. I'm Bruce Barquette, substituting introduction tonight for Ms. Aida Leisenring, who actually is with us, but not entirely with us. Aida, how are you doing this evening?
I'm well, Bruce. Thanks for doing the introduction. I just wanted to see whether or not you had my back here. Yeah. Luckily, that's never happened at trial. But I didn't hear the music. I didn't hear the start. And I was still trying to prep for all the nuances, if you believe there are nuances and details about the Trump indictment. And I can't believe we've been talking about him for the 2 years we've been hosting this radio show. It seems like every other episode, there's new information.
Well, certainly new information this week. But should we start with Trump or should we start someplace else? Because I want to talk clean slate in New York. There's a new piece of legislation that has gotten through the General Assembly and the State Senate and is sitting on the governor's desk waiting to be signed or, I suppose, vetoed. And there's also a lawyer in Manhattan who got himself into a little bit of trouble by using ChatGPT. Did I have that right?
Yeah, that's a AI-generated chat box. I'm going to totally describe it wrong, but a lot of organizations are using ChatGPT, which is run by artificial intelligence, and it can go rogue.
And it did go rogue for this particular lawyer who I don't know that we need to name him because I think the story is more interesting than his name. But what he did was he used chat. I always get the letters wrong. My dyslexia is showing. It's ChatGPT, JPT.
You got it. Yep. Yep.
GTP. Yep. And for those of us who don't know what it is or don't know much about it, you can actually ask it to write things for you. So you can say, write me a poem about my lover. Write me a essay about spring. Write me Christmas cards for my friends. And you give him a little bit, you give it a little bit of detail, and it spits out an essay. And it's actually been useful for a whole host of practical purposes. College professors are don't quite know what to do with it because their students seem to be using it to write papers. High school students as well. One of my kids has a prohibition. You can't use it to write essays. This lawyer thought it would be a great idea to save himself all kinds of time and write a brief on a legal point before Judge Castell. Remember Judge Castell?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately.
Remember Judge Castell?
I do.
Yes, he is not somebody to be trifled with. And no. the AI, artificial intelligence, emphasis on artificial, made up case citations, made up a legal argument.
I'm not sure that the lawyer who's he's been practicing for, I think, decades along with his associate. I don't think he asked it to write a brief. I think he sought it the way lawyers use Westlaw and LexisNexis, a search engine, to find case citations, where you would go online and say, type in, like, looking for search term, constitutional violations,
Espionage Act,
et cetera. Right. And then it gives you a list of sites. And then you generally click on those sites and you read it to see if it's on point. And if so, you might include it to establish or corroborate your point. And what happened is, for some reason, there was like a billing issue at the firm. And so they lost their version. They were using something other than Westlaw or LexisNexis. It was called like FastNet or something. So he looked on Google and used this ChatGPT to generate case captions for whatever point he was establishing in his brief. And it turned out that AI duped him into fake case citations that the other side, actually, Avianca, an airline, Colombian airline. Don't ask me how I know that, but the lawyers for that realized that they couldn't find the case sites, and they kept inquiring about it, and ultimately it was revealed that they were fake. So he's in a lot of trouble, but what I think can be discerned is that it was a mistake, that it was unintentional, and the question is, was it in bad faith, or was it careless and just simply a mistake? And that's what his lawyers are saying to the court. They're saying, don't sanction him. Look, this isn't novel. Lawyers learning technology, you know, has been happening through the last couple of decades. I think AI is crazy and potentially super destructive. I do think if the lawyer did that, it was sloppy. But that said,
Look, the sloppy part is this: it spits out the case citations, and I think he did ask it to write part of the brief, or at least, I guess, find the cases that you can't just cut and paste. You have to actually read the cases to see if they're applicable or not.
Right.
The fact that it's the same as you kind of like reading a law review article, and you see some cases that stand for a certain proposition in the law review article, and then you go ahead and cite them. That's nuts. You can't do that. You have to read the cases first.
But and look, I'm not advocating or defending sloppiness. But if you've been, you know, practicing attorney for 20 or 30 years, you should never cut corners. I absolutely appreciate that. But it's not uncommon for lawyers to not reinvent the wheel when it comes to certain motions that tend to be what they call boilerplate, that are just routinely filed by lawyers again and again and again every single day. And from that, you might share with colleagues or former colleagues and cut and paste. And there are certain landmark cases that you're not going to look up in detail. You should always make sure that they're valid and still laws, but you kind of recognize by name. This isn't what happened here, but I'm telling you, Chat GPT is not the culprit here. It's the lawyers if they used it in this fashion, but it is dangerous, okay? Because ultimately people are going to rely on it in other industries. And I saw an article recently, and maybe this doesn't go into criminal justice, but it sort of does, because we have clients with mental health issues frequently. But this mental health organization, I read an article, perhaps in the New York Times, was using Chat GPT to dole out mental health advice to people that were calling a mental health call line, you know, people that were contemplating suicide or having dark thoughts, because they were facing a shortage of mental health counselors to give out this advice. So they gave the Chat GPT AI a script. And what happened is they learned that the Chat GPT was going off script and creating its own advice. Insane.
It is. But
maybe a lawyer in good faith is all I'm saying. In good faith, relied upon GPT. Maybe it was sloppy. Maybe it was a mistake. But in good faith, and didn't realize that it would come back with maybe not totally accurate citations, but completely false ones.
Yeah, made up ones. It absolutely invented the citation. So I think it's a lesson for everybody using this particular device, if you can call it that, or this technology, that the technology is not so good yet. And you got to double check the facts that it's putting into the essays that you're going to use them.
But Bruce,
this lawyer, and we know this judge. This judge is sitting up nights figuring out ways to how to, you know.
Right. I don't know about that, but let me just tell you something. And just because we should actually start talking about artificial intelligence on this show and how it's going to impact law. And this is totally a non sequitur from law, poetry. I thought the one place AI could not really make an impact was with art, right? Like it could maybe create song lyrics, but I thought they're not going to be very good. A friend of mine from boarding school, who, by the way, his mom was the original voice of Siri, posted this on Instagram. I asked ChatGPT to write a short poem in the voice of Kurt Vonnegut, why humans should stop giving each other life advice. Listen to this poem. This is what got churned out. Advice, a charade, wisdom's hubris on display, sift through life's debris. Seek not to steer souls, for we stumble and we learn. Unbound, we discern. Let hearts chart their course, unburdened by hollow words, life's truths self-conferred. That's a pretty good poem, okay? As someone who at one point in her life loved to write poetry, that almost makes me not want to write poetry ever again. Not that I've been in the habit of doing so lately, but
I'll wait. You know, like, the jury in my mind is out on ChatGPT. We'll wait and see. And like many new technologies, you don't want to buy the first model, because the first model is going to be improved. They're going to come out with a brand new car. You don't want to start off with the first car off the assembly line, because it's inevitably going to have a few kinks in it that need to be ironed out. So this lawyer had found that, I think, is about to get a tough lesson in that, unfortunately. Look, we're dancing around the Trump thing a little bit. We'll come back to it. I want to do talk about the Clean Slate Act in New York as well, which is a piece of legislation that's going to wipe out criminal convictions 3 years after you've completed your sentence or your probation for misdemeanors, and 8 years after you've completed your sentence, prison sentence, probation, parole, whatever, for felonies, except for certain felonies, A felonies, and some sex offenses.
Like murder and, like, you know, major drug trafficking offenses.
Right, but not manslaughter, not criminally negligent homicide. So it's not clear that the judge will sign it or not.
The governor.
The governor. It's not clear that she'll sign it. She hasn't said anything about it yet, or at least not that I've heard. I have mixed feelings about it, to be honest with you. Yeah, I want to have people to be able to get a second chance at life. We hire people that have been convicted of crimes. We've hired lawyers that have had problems with the Bar Association, because we believe that people can get a second chance. And, you know, you made a mistake, it doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you a person. Everybody makes mistakes from time to time, even bad ones. So you should be given another opportunity to continue on and live life and do what you have to do. But I don't like erasing history. I don't. If I choose to hire somebody who is, was criminally convicted, say had a drug offense, had drug sales or a fraud conviction or something, a number of years ago, that's my choice, and I'd like to be able to make it, but I want it to be informed. I don't want it to be forced upon me. I don't want to wake up one day and find out through somebody else that I hired someone who was convicted of fraud.
Your new employee's conduct?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I have mixed feelings about it, and like with bail reform and discovery reform, my fear is that this left-leaning legislature in New York's General Assembly went a bit too far and didn't think it through.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because I'll be the lefty in this group here for a hot second. This isn't expunged after you plead guilty. For misdemeanors, it's 3 years after you've served your sentence. And for felonies, 8 years thereafter, with certain exceptions on things that I think we can all agree we'd like to know, like if you've been charged with rape, murder, or a major, you know, drug trafficking offense. People can demonstrate, say you're charged with grand larceny, you get convicted, and then you go from the age of 21 to 29, 30. Right. And you're a different person. That's going to stick with you for the rest of your life. And every time you apply for a job, you're going to have to explain that. And not everyone believes in second chances. And so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think it can be actually a great thing. We are a country that kind of over prosecutes everything. And we know this because we incarcerate more people per capita than any other country in the world, including China. All right. So maybe we need a little more of this, and we need a little pushback. I appreciate that this won't be the case. You know, you say people have a right to know. I think the government, I'm not sure, I haven't read all the details of Clean Slate, but if you're applying for any government job or applying for immigration or you need special security clearance, you know, you want to work for the police department, for the CIA, for the FBI, you want to get a green card, you want to get citizenship, you want to work for the transit authority, you're tasked with security clearance. They're going to know because they are entitled to ask you if you've ever been arrested. And you and I both know you can't undo that fact, right?
Right.
You can undo the conviction, but you can't undo the arrest, and you must discuss it and you must disclose that information. So, you know, this is for Dwayne Reed. This is, I guess I would say for law offices, it's not entirely clear because you still have to pass the character and fitness committee.
Well, and sure. So, regardless, and they'll ask you if you've been arrested to apply for admission to the bar.
You can't hide it, even if it was expunged. So there are some traps here that will save.
There are
generally.
I like the thought. I like the theory that people should be given a second chance. I like the idea that individuals who have truly kind of reform themselves aren't being subject to ongoing unwarranted discrimination. But I don't like the blanket nature of it. I don't like that it sort of undoes history and it makes people blind to look, if you want to get married, would you want to know? If somebody had, and 8 years isn't that long. You know, at 63 years old, 8 years ago, you and I were basically doing what we're doing now, except we weren't on the radio, right? I mean, 8 years just isn't that long of a time period. People don't change that dramatically in that amount of time. They don't always change that dramatically.
A prenup with an annulment clause built in if it's later revealed that you were arrested and had time expunged. Who knows? I mean, that's a good point. I'd like to know. But you know what? Most people don't do background checks.
They don't. But
spouses. But, I could have a drug conviction from 5 years ago, decide to marry an individual, and he wouldn't know. He wouldn't suspect, right?
I suppose.
For the record, I do not.
Yeah, no, I suppose. It reminds me a little bit of the forced pro bono work that lawyers are going to be compelled to engage in. When you register for the bar and you have to do it every 2 years, they already ask you what pro bono work you've done. And there is some mandatory pro bono work for younger lawyers that they're grandfathering in. I'm all about charity and doing good. And you know what? Our firm does a ton of free work for individuals that have been wrongly convicted and for some other individuals from time to time. I don't want to be told I have to, because it's no longer than an act of charity. It's no longer generosity on our part. It's simply compelled, forced mercy, if you will, forced charity, forced. It's almost a tax.
I don't know how that's related to the clean slate.
Because it's the same thing. If I want to hire somebody and give them a second chance, then I want to be able to do that. I don't want to be told I have to. Or I don't want to be told you can't know what the person's background is. We're not going to tell you about it.
You're like, damn it, I'm a good person. I don't want to have to follow these rules and be forced into being a good person.
I'm a good person voluntarily. But you're not a good person. It becomes a government decision. Another instance where the government has made a decision for all of us.
Let me pose the... what's that expression, unintended consequences, the what?
Yes. Yeah, right.
So think about this. You're about to go to trial on a rape one, meaning rape in the first degree. You're innocent. You want to try the case. You are adamant you didn't commit this rape and that the complainant is lying. And the DA's office offers you a misdemeanor. And your lawyer tells you, you know what? it's too risky to go to trial. I think you might win, but you never know what jury you'll get. But if you plead guilty to a misdemeanor, you can get your record expunged in 3 years. I wonder if it's going to have the effect of getting more individuals to plead guilty to crimes that they didn't commit because they can have them expunged in a matter of years.
Great point. I'm sure it will. It's a conversation that you and I had, I think, last week about the lack of trials and the kind of compelled guilty pleas. So we're going to come back in a few minutes after some news and weather and all that and messages from the sponsors.
And maybe we'll let you reintroduce us to the show again.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Maybe we'll all just
maybe I'll hear the music.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be back. In the meantime, feel free to look at our website. It's BarketEpstein.com, BarketEpstein.com. You can hear old shows. You can read about Aida and I. And you can actually see us. We'll see you after the break. Thanks very much. And we'll talk all things Trump as soon as we come back.
Justice Radio. My name is Aida Leisenring, and I'm here with Bruce Barquette. Welcome back, Bruce.
Are we back?
We are back.
Excellent, excellent. So, as many, including me, predicted, Trump got indicted in the Southern District of Florida in Miami.
A better venue for him than New York City.
Much better, including...
But a tougher adversary, the federal government.
Well, it not only is better than the New York City, but it's better than D.C., which he could have been indicted in D.C., but they would not have been able to charge him with obstruction in D.C. D.C., the obstructive acts have to take place within the jurisdiction, within the confines of Washington, D.C. It's a quirk in the federal circuits. In Florida, the obstructive acts can either take place in Florida or they can affect a government or a business or a court or an entity in Florida. So they chose to bring it in Florida, where 43% of the people in that county voted for Trump.
Do you think there was a strategic decision to include those two counts that they otherwise could not have in Washington, D.C., but give up a better jury pool for the government of Washington, D.C.?
Why?
Than Florida?
Yeah, I think it cut off. If they had indicted him in D.C., and they would have been obviously in the indictment, they would have alleged the obstructive acts because they go to his intent in hiding and concealing and the documents, the confidential information. And I think they decided to cut off that argument that he would have screamed and yelled that the acts all took place in Florida and what's he doing in D.C. and it's a terrible jury pool, much like the January 6th people who went to trial complained about the jury pool. And so now he's in Florida where he lives. 43% of the people in that county voted for him, or in that district, as I understand it. And he's got the same federal judge who oversaw the search warrant, who got reversed twice by the circuit for issuing bad orders or flawed orders concerning the special master and so forth. It's a Trump-appointed judge who did not distinguish herself or has not distinguished herself so far with respect to overseeing this matter. But she ended up with this case. She can do all kinds of things that can help him that won't be able to be appealed by the government, including kicking the trial down past the election. She can simply issue an order that says, we're not doing this until after the 2024 election. I'm issuing a stay. We're not moving forward with it. All kinds of things. The bail, think about the bail arguments that are going to happen tomorrow. Normally, a defendant goes in, even if you're a reputable individual, you're going to surrender your passport, your travel is going to be restricted, there's going to be restrictions on what you can say to the media. She can just brush all that aside.
Two financially responsible individuals must sign that bond. Yeah, he failed to appear. But right. Who are we kidding, Bruce? He's not going to fail to appear.
Oh no! I disagree. He thinks he's getting convicted. He'll flee to a country that can't extradite him.
But he thinks he's going to prison. Be a defense lawyer for a moment. He has appeared voluntarily so far.
I get it.
In Manhattan, at his arraignment, at all the court appearances he's been required to appear in front of. He's flown a day early to attend his arraignment tomorrow. And he is. He's famous and notorious. And
right.
So she may have his passport surrendered. I don't know how much international travel the man does anyway.
We'll see how it goes. So let's talk a little bit about the actual indictment.
Hey, Cliff Notes, 37 okay. counts.
37 counts. He took classified material he was not entitled to take.
Allegedly.
not allegedly. He wasn't entitled to take it.
That's up for debate. So this is indicating
me.
The allegations.
These are the allegations in the indictment. He took material he wasn't permitted to take. He hid the material. When they asked him for it back, he lied about it. When they issued a subpoena, he lied about having returned all of it when he kept some of it. He moved it around, so he hid it from people when they came to search for it. He talked openly about it being confidential and about it being classified. He disclosed it to people who didn't have security clearances. He showed it to people. He was bragging about it. He laughed about it. He told his lawyers to lie. There's a host of conduct that they alleged, much of which is, from what I can tell from reading the indictment, irrefutable. It comes from his own mouth, his text messages, his own voice, and the act of taking the material itself.
And just before we go into the details.
And let me just add one more thing, because I've had it with this guy. I've had it with him in a way that I can't tell you I've had it. And I've had it with the people that support him. I really have. I'm done with defending this demon who has kicked open the gates of hell for our country and done more harm in 5 or 6 years than anybody has done in 220 years. The other thing, that what they didn't do, they didn't charge him for taking the items, although they could have. They didn't even charge him for keeping the items, although they could have. Once he returned documents, they didn't charge him for any of those. The only thing they charged him for are the documents that he took, that he retained, and that he lied about having, and that he hid from them when they came down searching for it. That's the allegations in the indictment. I don't think there's a factual dispute about what took place, and I don't really see a legal defense. The people screaming about what about Hillary and Hunter Biden is ridiculous. To me, it's like you got a speeding ticket for going 105 on the Long Island Expressway, and you're complaining that somebody else didn't get a speeding ticket for perhaps going 70.
The main difference between Pence, I think every single former president has kept and retained documents that they were not authorized, quote unquote, to keep. But once that was discovered, they returned them at the request of the National Archives. I forget what it's called, NARA. That said, that wasn't the case here with Trump. But before, look, I'm certainly not defending Trump. And I am playing devil's advocate intentionally, just because I think we're always faced with this as federal criminal practitioners, is we look at an indictment, and right now you're looking at the indictment and you're reading it with your understandable bias against Trump and everything you know about him, right? And generally speaking, when we get a client, we don't know the client as well as we may know Trump from his legacy, right? But we don't take the indictment at face value. I haven't looked at the grand jury minutes. I haven't looked at the discovery in this case. I haven't looked at all the evidence. I haven't actually heard the recording. So I've heard the quotes of the recording. But let me just put a few ideas into your head here, starting off with paragraph 4 of the indictment. So it starts off with this premise that, and I'll read it to you. Trump caused scores of boxes, many of which contain classified documents, to be transported to the Mar-a-Lago Club in Palm Beach, Florida, where he maintained his residence. This is in the indictment. Trump was not authorized to possess or retain those classified documents. No mention at all of the Presidential Records Act, And I'm not saying that's a surefire defense, but it's certainly something that the defense will be introducing to a judge in motion practice and to a jury. The fact that under the Presidential Records Act of 1978, it establishes detailed procedures for handling the records of former presidents and a civil process for resolving any disputes about them. And so it was put into place knowing that former presidents have taken documents, that there's been disputes about whether or not they can take them, and they've created a civil process for that. And that Records Act doesn't itself carry criminal penalties for noncompliance. And the indictment never seems to mention the act or to distinguish why the act isn't applicable here. So I think
Why would it? It's a red herring. He's not being charged with taking the items on January 21st of 2021.
Right, but when
that's
you
not start, the charge.
But my don't get mad.
I'm not mad. I'm just saying.
Calm down. What I'm saying here is when you start off with a premise, right, that he's done something wrong by taking possession at all of them, right, that it automatically skews grand jurors against any other activity and against, looking at any conduct in the light most favorable to the accused. Doesn't he say it?
Doesn't I just skip over the fact that he said it on a tape? The people were recording him because they knew what he was doing was wrong and they wanted to defend themselves. And he said that stuff was highly confidential, top secret. As president, I could have declassified it. Now I can't.
About that specific. So this is what happens. This is what gets lost in article after article after article. If you actually read the indictment.
I'm looking at the indictment right now. I read it from the indictment.
Paragraph 34. What they allege is, and I'm going to quote it, upon in July 21st of 2021, when he was no longer president, Trump gave an interview in his office at the MedMinister Club to a writer and a publisher in connection with the then forthcoming book. Two members of Trump's staff also attended the interview, which was recorded with Trump's knowledge and consent. So he actually knew the interview was being recorded. And what they claim is when confronted with a question by these reporters and writers that he had basically decided to attack country A, which everyone is speculating is Iran, and that a senior military official advised Trump against doing so, he defended himself and said, actually, and that's when he started waving the document and saying, and hold on a second. Just hear me out here. I'm not defending Trump. I'm just saying, like,
you're repeating his talking points. It is that's exactly what you can't do. And what the other part of the indictment that I thought was extremely.
Hold on. I'm not done my point.
Go ahead.
And so the recording implies that he's using the content of this otherwise classified document to defend himself, but not divulging the item because it's classified. So was the fact that the military supported his decision to attack country A classified? In other words, if he was president and the media said, we hear you're not taking the advice of the military, and he says, well, actually, the military backs me up. Is that statement classified? Or is the sensitive, or is the information contained in the memorandom sensitive, like the tactical plans and why they're not supporting it? So if he's going, for example, and it's radio, so you can't see me waving. Actually, I have a document here that proves that what you're saying is false, but I can't show it to you. It's classified. It's secret. Is that divulging classified information? I don't know the answer to that. I'm curious.
It's revealing the fact that he knows he's not supposed to have it. And it's one of the things he lied about having. It's one of the things that he kept when he knew he shouldn't have kept it, hid it from the government when they came to look for it, when the FBI came down to try to resolve this under the Presidential Record Act. They moved boxes from one place to another. They kept them stored in a bathroom on the stage at his country club in Florida. It's outrageous behavior on the part of anybody. For a former president to be doing this, it's unbelievable. One of the things that they did in the indictment, which I thought was very effective and very powerful, was they quoted him about what he would do as president with individuals who recklessly handle classified information or documents, just like he did. And obviously, he thought he was talking about Hillary. He never imagined that his words would come back and haunt him, but that's exactly what happened. He was talking about how I won't tolerate it. People should be prosecuted. You can't use classified information for personal purposes. It has to be used for the benefit of the government. And when he's waving the document around in an interview, doing what you just described, it's exactly personal. It's not for the government. He shouldn't have it. He shouldn't be doing that. It is illegal, and there's really no defense for it. And, well, and if he had any
terrible news for you, Bruce, I have terrible news for you. Say he gets convicted. Okay.
Which he will.
And he's sentenced to jail time, to prison time, to federal detention time. Can he still run and be elected and be president?
I think he can still run. The constitutional crisis that follows him getting convicted and getting elected is something that our nation has never seen before. Not for a presidency. It's had for members of Congress. It hasn't for the presidency. Just stop for a second. And all you need to know about this guy is this. If he had any decency about him at all, any decency, any sense of service to the country, he would say, look, I can't run with these pending indictments. They're nonsense. I'm going to defeat them. I'm going to move as quickly as I can to get acquitted. If I can get them resolved in time, I'll run. If I can't, maybe I'll run next time. I won't. But he doesn't care about that.
Of course not. And Bruce, I understand everything that you're saying, and I mostly agree with what you're saying. But my point is, let's actually explore these issues. There's only three constitutional requirements for presidential candidates. They have to be natural born citizens, which means he is.
Him and Obama both are, contrary to what he argued for years.
Right. But what's crazy is that I'm less qualified to run for office than Trump because I was born in Spain. You must be at least 35 years old. Sadly, I'm qualified in that regard.
Check.
And have been a resident of the United States for 14 years. So do you know who Eugene V. Debs was?
No.
He ran for president from prison in 1920, and he's so far the only person who sought the highest office while in prison, but he was the most successful. He was a Socialist Party nominee while serving a 10-year federal sentence for urging people to resist the World War I draft. He received 3% of the popular vote, which was pretty respectable tally for an incarcerated socialist, and so forth. If he actually would have won, and let's say Trump wins and he's convicted, he can actually pardon himself, right? Because it's a federal crime, so he has the power to pardon himself.
But
he couldn't do that in New York if he gets convicted of the New York crime. But now, under the Clean Slate Act,
well, 8 years later, he can run again.
That's
too funny.
Article 25. I mean, it's just look. We can get mad or we can have fun with the legal issues here, right?
I'm not mad. I'm indignant that we have to put up with this man.
But my point
it's been 8 years
is,
now.
Is I get asked all the time, what would happen if he got elected? And it's a question I didn't have an answer for. And, you know, I can give the BS, visceral kind of gut response. But I like to look these things up and see whether or not I'm right. And the Article 25 would have to, basically establish through a written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. I think he would argue that even from inside of a jail cell, he could, as long as given the means to communicate and so forth. But
right,
he can do, would likely pardon himself, or a judge would hold the sentence in abeyance. And
how about the more interesting? Not more interesting because I think it's more realistic. He won't get the nomination. He won't get elected. We'll go through torture all the way through until we finally rid ourselves of him. He's like Jason in one of the horror movies. He just can't get rid of him.
Well,
and he really is. He really is just a horrid person.
It is a weird
stain on our government and a stain on the country. He's one of the worst people I've ever conceived of.
Yeah,
I can't even imagine. Wait.
This is not a rant session. I mean,
let me ask this.
We're hoping to give information to our listeners.
Does he go to prison? Does he go to? He's not going to get the nomination. He's not going to get elected.
But when he goes to prison, he's still a former president, and he has.
Does he go to prison? Does he go to prison? Do they sentence him to prison for this? This is not. I mean, look. Somebody said there's 400 years of. He's not getting 400 years, and he's not getting 20 years. He's not getting anywhere near that. The guidelines are a couple of years. What would he get? So suppose the guidelines. Okay, you get 40 months for this. Do they send him to prison? Do they give him home detention? What do they do with him at that point?
They probably give him home detention.
Some version of that.
Especially if it's this same judge.
Right. No,
I'll tell you this. In Manhattan, I think he has a different fate because who is the individual who was sentenced? It would have been his co-defendant.
Weisenberg.
Weisenberg. He got how many months? Like 4 months?
I thought it was 6 or 9.
Yeah, no, it was actually a high prison time for the same exact charges. First time, you know, a lot of commentators are saying, well, but someone like Trump probably wouldn't serve jail time if convicted in Manhattan because most first-time offenders don't get jail time. That's not true for white-collar crimes of high-profile individuals. And this judge gave his former partner or employee 6 months.
Chief Financial Officer, six months
incarceration. So and it's the same judge. So he most certainly will give Trump
more jail time. So look, great show. I was the rant. You were the legal, cool-headed analysis. So our listeners got to hear me rant about Trump and you being reasonable and thinking it through. So hopefully we enjoy it.
Just for contrarian's sake.
We'll be back next week with more on Crime and Justice Radio. Have a good week and celebrate Juneteenth next Monday. We'll see you later.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.